You know, it's kind of interesting to me that of all of the studies, Bible study we've had over the years, and I've been around a long time, I don't think I've ever seen a study devoted totally to Hebrews. I wonder why that is. It's kind of an interesting book. And what I want to try and do this morning is to take you through the book of Hebrews. Let's start out by reading the introduction that is given in the Bible to us. This is Hebrews chapter 1, beginning with verse 1. In the past, God spoke to our forefathers through the prophets, and many times and in various ways. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, and through whom he made the universe. The Son is the radiance of God's glory and an exact representation of his being, sustaining all things by his powerful word. After he had provided purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty in heaven. I would encourage you to keep your Bible open. We're going to go through the entire book this morning. You say, oh boy, this sermon's going to take forever. No, we're going to try and do it a little faster than that. But I think it's important to realize that this gospel, this book, has been called the fifth gospel by scholars. There are two qualities that make Hebrews stand out for us. The first is that it presents Jesus so that we see the humanity of Christ, as well as his greatness and as well as his deity. So we see Jesus as a human, as a man of weakness, being human. But it also paints for us our mighty God. It points to Jesus as a great high priest who gives us unlimited access to God. And it fulfills John 12 and verse 32, where Jesus says, once I have been lifted up, I will draw all men unto me. And that's what Hebrews does. So the two qualities that make this book special is because of the presentation it makes to us of Jesus. The second thing that makes this book stand out is that it connects the New and the Old Testament. Now, I'm not sure any other book in the Bible does that. This book is unique. It's special. It has an important message to it. So the book gives us the ability to learn to interpret the items in the tabernacle, the laws, the sacrifices, the priesthood, the covenants, the festivals. It gives us types, it gives us foreshadows, it gives us prefigurations of the things that are involved, and reminds us that our own righteousness is inadequate as a relationship to God. So you say, well, I don't understand how anybody could call this the fifth gospel. Well, that's what scholars have done. It's not a story of Jesus' ministry. They say that those that hold that it's the fifth gospel, that it reveals a picture of Jesus that is different. You know, the Gospels are all approaches to the good news. But each book approaches it in a different way. I'm not sure we've ever really understood very well all of the things that make us have four Gospels, let alone five, instead of just one. You think about it, most of the biographies we've read and the autobiography we've read of great human figures just takes one book. Jesus is so much better, so much greater than any human that ever lived. You can't do it in one book. So in the book of Matthew, we see Jesus revealed as the one who fulfilled the prophecies of the Old Testament, who completes and satisfies the law of Moses. Now you may want to chew on that a little bit. That's why we have the outline. In Mark, you see Jesus is presented as the one who announced the coming of the kingdom of God. All the Gospels do that, but Mark does it uniquely. That's his primary focus. I love the book of Luke. Luke reveals Jesus as the one who brings salvation, even in this life, and especially to the poor, especially to the outcast, to women, and to the Gentiles, because Luke himself was a Gentile. In the book of John, we see Jesus as the Son of God through his miracles. And the statements of I am. But Hebrews shows Jesus as the great high priest for God, for all of God's people. That's unique. That's different, and that's why it's been called the fifth gospel by scholars. Hebrews was given to us to encourage us. I don't know why we haven't studied it more. As I tried to prepare this lesson, I saw an awful lot there that we haven't seen in any other presentation. As a matter of fact, at the end of the book in Hebrews 13, verse 22, the writer says, I urge you, fellow citizens, listen patiently to what I say, to encourage you. And the word chosen to say encourage in that particular verse is the word perikles. Okay. What that means is to lift you up, to encourage you, to lift you up. Boy, there are times when I need that. How about you? As I look across my screen here and I see people I know and love, I see each of them having a different need to be lifted up. As I see Jim Harris Savage, his needs are much different than Gary Bundle's. Different again than Richard's and Cynthia's and Sam's. So this book was given to encourage us. Now, if you have a Bible that has headings in it at the top of each section, we're going to go through this verse by verse, but in sections. So from Hebrews 1:1 to Hebrews 4:13, we read about the superiority of Christ. Oh, my, do we need that today? Because we have so many people who are denigrating the superiority of Christ. In chapter 1, verses 1 through 3, we're told that Jesus is superior to the prophets. And there are people who continue to bring up Ezekiel or Elijah, or, you know, that led to the UFO thing. Ezekiel especially. In verse 5 through chapter 2 and verse 18, we're told that Jesus is superior to the angels. Oh, do we have confusion about angels? But in verses chapter 2, verses 1 through 4, we're told don't trust in angels. Why not? Because angels could sin. Bible talks about the angels that sinned. Read 2 Peter. We have people today who grab hold of angels. It always makes me sort of astounded that when we get into the Christmas season, we see angels all over the place. and we almost seem to neglect the major thing the angels are talking about, the birth of Jesus Christ. Angels are just God's messengers. We're told that when we die, we will become as angels. We need to be careful not to let angels get in the way of our relationship to Jesus. And there are denominations that rely upon angels. Talk to our Mormon friends, for example. We have the next section. This is Hebrews 3, starting with verse 1 and through verse 19. We're told that Jesus has appeared to Moses. Moses could not lead his people to rest. But we have denominations that are still quoting Moses, still using Moses as a guide to when they worship and what they do in worship. In chapter 4, verses 1 through 13, we're told that Jesus is superior to Joshua. You say, well, why would Joshua be involved? Because Joshua led Israel into their inheritance. But Jesus leads us into a better rest. In chapter 4 of Hebrews, starting with verse 14, the Bible says, therefore, since we have a great high priest. So what we're told in Hebrews 4:14, and that goes all the way through chapter 10 and verse 18, is Jesus as a high priest. You say, why is that important? Why all that discussion about a high priest? Because the high priest was the vehicle through which God communicated to man. Think about the Old Testament and what happened and how Israel celebrated all the festivals, all of the celebrations. And Hebrews talks about that. The high priest was a major vehicle. We're told in chapter 4 through verse 14 through chapter 5 and verse 10 that Jesus was appointed as a priest. And what's particularly interesting is that we're told that Jesus was appointed after the order of Melchizedek. That's chapter 5, verse 11 through chapter 7, verse 28. What was the significance of Melchizedek? Because he was not a Levite. You go back and you read the Old Testament account of Melchizedek. He became a high priest because of his work, because of what he did, because of the superiority of him, not because he inherited that office. There were catastrophes in the history of Israel because we had guys that were part of the Levite tribe and became priests because of that. And they were bums, pure and simple. Melchizedek was a king of Salem, was a person who became a high priest because of the way he lived, what he did, his work, what he accomplished. And that was true of Jesus Christ as well. Starting with chapter 8, beginning with verse 1, all the way through chapter 9 and verse 10, we have the presentation of Jesus as bringing the new covenant. We can spend a month talking about the new covenant. What's the difference between the new covenant and the old covenant? We have denominations in our world today that don't understand that difference. And as a result, they get confused about which covenant they're living under. Chapter 8, beginning with verse 1 through chapter 9 and verse 10, Hebrews tells us every aspect, listen to this carefully, every aspect of the old order had its counterpart in the new covenant. You know, we have this idea that somehow the Old Testament contains stuff that's not in the New Testament. We have denominations that mix the New and the Old Testament because they don't understand that everything in the Old Testament, in one way or another, was incorporated, had a counterpart in the New Testament. That's explained in Hebrews 8, verse 1, beginning all the way through chapter 9 and verse 10. One of the things I hope you'll do in your study, your private study this week, is to take that outline, which I will mail to you if you're not at services, and go through that and look at that comparison in those verses. And of course, the end result of that section is that the work of Jesus was centered in his perfect atonement. Chapter 9, verse 11 through chapter 10 and verse 18. And we just participated in a communion service. And why did we do that? What was the purpose of that? Because we're celebrating the atonement. Our high priest offered himself as the atonement, and that's the message of those verses. Now, if we had a Bible class on that, we could spend 6 months talking about that easily, because everything incorporated there, if you spend some time to get down and look through it, you'll see how beautifully crafted that book is. It's so obvious it came from God, because humans couldn't do what we see in the book of Hebrews. But then from chapter 10 and verse 19 to the close of the book, there are exhortations, there are warnings, and there is advice that is relevant to the 21st century. We're told in chapter 10, beginning with verse 19 through 25, hold fast. Oh man, do we need that? We have congregations of the Lord's church today that are turning loose of the original New Testament plea and grabbing on to what they see out there in the world that looks more entertaining. We're told, hold fast. That's Hebrews chapter 10, beginning with verse 10. This is the book of Hebrews. We're warned about apostasy, chapter 10, starting with verse 26. Let me put that in modern language. Don't buy into scams. Did you hear me? Don't buy into scams. We live in an age of scams. From the election on down. And tragically, I continue to hear from people that say, well, I heard on television this and so. Scam. I heard this preacher talk about this scam. Hebrews says, don't buy into scams. And this book continues by encouraging people based upon past experience. Read chapter 10, starting with verse 32. And again, these verses and these chapters are in your bulletin when you get it. Look at the past. What has happened in the past? Not only biblically, but what has happened in the past 100 years? What has happened to the church in my lifetime? Now, it's not quite 100 years, but what has happened? We're encouraged in chapter 11, starting with verse 1, to look at the biblical examples from the past. And that chapter 11 of Hebrews is probably the most quoted book in Hebrews in sermons and outlines of the whole book. Because what we're told to do is to look back at Moses, look back at Noah, look back. There's a whole chapter, 40 verses in chapter 11, about heroes of faith, we're told, and they are. That should encourage us. And then chapter 12. Oh my. We get advice based upon pain and suffering. Chapter 12, verses 1 through 29. The first 13 verses, the writer of Hebrews tells us to consider suffering as a chastisement. You say, what does that mean? Profit by what suffering brings to you. Does that mean I always like it? You've all heard my story over and over. Having a child born with multiple birth defects. Did I like it? No. Am I happy about it? No. Has it molded me and shaped me? Yeah. The latest issue of Time magazine, there's an article by a lady who apparently had an abortion and is trying to live with it, and she's writing because she's an atheist. And she can't make any sense at all out of it. Well, of course not. I'm not happy that my child was born with blindness and mental retardation and cerebral palsy and muscular dystrophy and schizophrenia. No, I'm not happy about that. But that chastisement has molded me and shaped me. Losing my wife after 49 years. Cindy can tell you I still am moved to tears at the drop of a hat. Things keep flashing back. 49 years of your life. Chastisement. I look at Jim Harris Savage and I wonder, where is he going to go with that cancer? I look at the stuff the Bundles have gone through and think about, how's the church going to respond? How are we going to grow from prejudice and anarchy and the tragedy that has been part of the history of this country? I look at Richard. I look at the struggles he's had trying to take care of a family member with all kinds of difficulties. And how's that going to change us? The answer to all that is that each one of these things can be part of my ministry. I don't know what we can do with cancer, but I know that Jim's experience when he is finally healed is that we can reach out uniquely to people in this community that are suffering from cancer. We need to make a better inroad into the Black and brown community in Dowagiac and Niles than we have in the past. And the Bundles are going to be leaders in that. I believe that that discussion in Hebrews is so important. In verses 14 through 17, a continuation of this, there's the discussion of Esau, who sold his inheritance for a single meal. That's a warning. What are your priorities? What were Esau's priorities? Food. Can when you relate to that? Yeah. But our priorities have to shape what we do as a congregation, what we do as an individual. In chapter 12, beginning with verse 18 through verse 29, there's a discussion about the contrast between the New Testament and the Old Testament. You know, when I read the Old Testament, one of the things it always flashes across my mind is, man, am I glad we don't live under that kind of system today. The freedom, the beauty, the strength, the significance of all things being new. The beauty of the message of Jesus as seen in the Sermon on the Mount compared to the Ten Commandments and the laws of Exodus and Deuteronomy and Leviticus. And then in chapter 13, there's a discussion of Christian responsibilities. Exhortations in the first 8 verses about our personal life and how we behave socially. And then a warning in chapter 13, starting with verse 9 and going through verse 25, to not let Judaism invade the church. You say, well, that's not a problem for me. Have you ever watched your television set when religious organizations are presenting materials on the tube? What are they wearing? How do they conduct themselves? What's their language? My Jewish friends back in South Bend used to comment upon the similarities between what God gave the Jews and what they see in the vestas of ministers of various denominations. We have a tendency to copy Judaism. So what's the message to you and me living in the 21st century? I mean, this has been a thumbnail sketch of the book of Hebrews. I hope when things get back to normal and we can resume classes, one of the classes maybe we can do is a class on Hebrews. Spend significant time verse by verse going through what we've just outlined very superficially. The first message to us today is Christianity is valid and it is superior to every other religious system in existence. Let me say that again. Christianity is valid and it is superior to every other religious system in existence. And you say, well, you're being very intolerant. No, I don't tolerate anybody. That's not the issue. We are to treat those who are outside of Christ with love and with respect and with concern. But that doesn't mean I endorse everything they say and everything they teach. In the pandemic, my son, who is in a group home, and I have not been able to get together, but I call him every day and I read to him every day. You say, well, what do you read to him about other religious organizations? I have a whole drawer full of books here. Books that say an encyclopedia of world religions. Books that say handbook of denominations. He's very interested in that. Flyers that people have sent me about the religious beliefs of different cults and different organizations. And I don't know how much Tim is learning, but you know what I'm learning? I'm learning about the superiority of Christianity. When you read about some of the nonsense that is taught by people religiously, this is why I come back to don't buy the cults. Don't allow yourself to apostatize into some hot, flash-talking, quick-selling person. No matter how good they may sound, stay with Jesus Christ. Christ is superior to every other religious character, including all Old Testament characters. Prophets, angels, Moses, Joshua. That's what the book is talking about. And Christ fulfilled every aspect of what a high priest was about, 100%. These are things you and I can take from this book. It's not just written for somebody else. It's not just written for Jews. It's written for all humanity. We need to be encouraged by what Christ has done for us. So the bottom message, don't get drawn off into some other religion. Understand that there's a lot of fast-talking sellers out there, a lot of people that speak far better than I can, have much better stories. And that's what people are interested in to a great extent. Stay with Jesus Christ. And don't let suffering get you down. You know, we're all hurting. All of us. Some of us aren't hurting as bad as Jim is hurting. I'm talking to Jim before we started today, and he had a rough week. He's got 3 more chemos. I can't imagine what that does to you. I see Richard there, and I know the struggles he's having with Melba. I look at Gary and Della and the racial issues that they have had to face. I can't understand that. I don't understand all that. I'm probably more than most of you because of my past life. But this is the 21st century, and the things I experienced was in the 1940s and 50s. Don't let it get you down. And finally, understand what you can't do, Christ will do for you. What you can't do, Christ will do for you. The message of Hebrews to people living in the 21st century couldn't possibly be any more relevant. What a great book, the fifth gospel. We have a song that has been chosen that makes that plea. And if this invitation is particularly relevant to you, contact one of the people that you've seen on the materials that's coming out. Contact the Zoom people, and we will do everything in our power to help you. Let's sing this song together.